This is Papa Hale speaking, and you are listening to a Wrestling with Words podcast. Visit us at WrestlingWithWords.com and follow us on Twitter at WrestleWords. If you don't, you are not Papa Hale's approved. But remember to always be fired up!
Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the Wrestling with Words Audio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger and Tamika, the Scream Queen.
What's up, what's up?
Here, time to party.
Alright, first of all, I like to say, Danny, on behalf of Tamika and I, we want to congratulate you on becoming the official AWE fan liaison.
Thank you.
Congratulations,
the fan liaison to the championship committee. I'm hearing ideas and trying to take, I guess, with the voice of the people to the championship committee and let them see, at least from an outsider's perspective, the fans feel should be given contendership matches and championship matches. I'm still kind of new on what all the position entails. It's kind of being given and told to me as the time goes on. But thank you. Thank you for the campaigning and all of your hilarious help to earn me the votes. I think they said I won by 2 votes. So if you had made a few more memes, I might have won by a much larger margin, Patrick.
But we worked hard. It was a fair election.
And a win's a win, yeah.
We did work hard. I put posters out. I spread the word. Of course, Tamika in the campaign offices, also manning the interwebs. We did pretty good. If anybody ever wanted to run for some kind of office and wants us to make a good joke out of it, hire us. We'll at least get you elected.
Yeah. Hey, so far you guys are 1-0. One attempt and one success. So I'd say you're 100%.
We are undefeated.
Record and say I actually have real political campaign experiences as well. So that makes us kind of by proximity 2-0. So we're on a roll.
Nice. But all jokes aside, it's cool. I'm glad that this is something that I know you'll enjoy and have fun with. With that, let's talk about Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment for a little bit. They just had their latest show last Sunday, and it was quite an interesting show. The hierarchy adding new members and basically putting down anybody who tried to get in their way, including getting rid of, again, who I've called many a times, the Kennesaw Choke Artist, Chip Day. As the hierarchy literally clotheslined him out of the group. And Martin Stone is now part of the hierarchy. Apparently, it was the plan all along as he retained the championship. And then they kicked Chip to the curb. And now they have declared Freebird rules on the Georgia Wrestling Crown Championship. Which is crazy. Any member of the hierarchy cannot defend this championship.
I mean, that's what Martin said. Martin seemed to say that the belt belonged to him and therefore it belonged to the hierarchy, because the hierarchy ran AWE, that they were going to make the rules on how the belt should be defended. We'll see how that holds, I guess.
Freebird rules in full effect. That is the name of the game. As the champion, I understand there's a championship committee, and no offense to, someone I helped get kind of elected to this committee, but as a champ, your words carry weight. This is your title to defend, and if you say, hey, Freebird rules, then damn it, Freebird rules.
I think that that is not right. I think that it should be held by one person and one person only.
And it's a singles championship, you know? Why would it be held by multiple people? Why would multiple people be allowed to defend it?
Is AWE out of heroes? Do heroes even exist?
You know, we saw kind of a series of promos by a lot of different people at the end of the show, and I don't know if there's anybody that's really willing to work together. I think all the people that, you know, could be considered heroes, they all kind of have histories with all the other people that could be considered heroes. I mean, you know, Chip Day is no longer a member of the hierarchy. So we're, you know, the feeling would be that he's going to want to get back at them, right? He's going to want to get back at them for kicking him out. He still wants to win that championship is my thought, but you know, the hierarchy is a big and powerful group. There's a lot of guys. Chip Day was with them for a long time. Are a lot of guys going to be willing to trust him right off the bat? Especially now, you know, once everybody thought they could trust Martin for the last year. You know, how are us as fans, how the rest of the wrestlers supposed to look at everybody? Yeah, I mean, in theory, anybody could be conspiring with the hierarchy. Anybody could be willing to change to the hierarchy. You know, I mean, there was a promo between Sugar Dunkerton and Owen Knight where they talked and Sugar saw an eye, you know, thanks for helping me out. And Owen's like, dude, I wasn't there just to help you out. He's like, I don't really like you either. He's like, I was there because I thought I saw it as a chance to possibly make a statement. So they both have common enemies. But that doesn't mean they're friends. That doesn't mean they can even necessarily work together. Okay, like, and then you think of all the rest of the people, like Aaron Epic, okay? Aaron Epic still has relationship. He's still, you know, he's had issues with the hierarchy for months. He's kind of a scumbag, okay? Who the heck wants to work with that guy? You know, who wants to be like his friend? Who feels that they can trust him when it comes down to it? So everybody, although there may be a lot of people that have individual issues with the hierarchy, you know, I think that just because people maybe have common enemies that may each other on the battlefield. I think that's where we're kind of sitting now. We may have a few heroes, but in order to even begin to combat the hierarchy, they need to work together and they need to trust each other. You know, because it's apparently within the hierarchy, there's trust and there's strength, and they, you know, they work as a group, they work as a unit for a specific and common goal. I don't know if anybody else in AWE can muster up enough men with, you know, and be able to do that right now.
Not only that, I think another point with Chip Day is, does he really deserve another shot? He has had shot after shot after shot, and no matter what, he has come up short.
These are answers and questions we're kind of discussing right now. I was entrusted by the members of the championship committee to pose the AWE Facebook group. Who should get a GWC championship shot against Martin Stone when AWE returns at the show 8 weeks later on September 2024?
There's a host of people who all want to step up.
Absolutely. Of course. Looking at the caliber of opponents those wins and losses came against. You know, looking at singles losses and wins versus tag losses and wins, and you know, the you know, possible accolades these stars may have accumulated elsewhere. What bearing do all these things have? You know, what weighs more heavily? I think that's kind of what we're meant to discuss is on the fan group and present that to the committee, and then they'll take into consideration as a group.
Now, Tamika, do you have anybody in mind that you could see as a challenger?
You know, honestly, I'm going to go out on a limb and say nobody's going to beat the hierarchy. You can bring your Owen Knights. You can bring your Sugar Duncan shot as well. Right now, in this era, and even 8 weeks later, I really cannot be beat. There is just too much unity there. I'm not going to lie. I'm a Chip Day fan. I am. And then you know what? We move on to the next. But Martin's a damn good wrestler. He out-wrestled Chip, plain and simple. Hierarchy is champ forever. Notice I didn't say one person. Hierarchy's champions forever.
Well, hopefully that won't be the case. I believe that there are people out there that can't stand up to the hierarchy. We see Shug D, you know, he can do it, but he needs to put away Agent Armor for good. He needs to stop meddling in Shug's business. And Owen Knight, you know, he's had some setbacks, but I think that he could get an opportunity. Who else? I'm not sure. Mr. Match of the Night, he already has a championship around his waist now. Why not add another? But let's go ahead and talk about that. The Submission Squad. Gary J and Evan Helistico won the wrestling the Georgia Wrestling Crown Tag Team titles.
We have new champs. We have new tag team champs vacated due to Iceberg being out medically, and you know, Tank, his last weekend is coming up this weekend at Scenic City. So this match was crazy, and honestly and truly, it could have went any way. I think the Gymnasty Boys were absolutely the crowd's favorites, and it looked like for a minute, up the scraps and take home the former champions, and the Carnies got put out of this one early, and dissension among the ranks.
A lot of questions unanswered, though. Who will challenge Martin Stone or a member of the hierarchy for the Georgia Wrestling Crown? Who will be the next challengers for the Georgia Wrestling Crown Tag Team titles? A lot more. 8 weeks later is the next show for AWE on September 24th. Before that, though, Monday Night Roar, August 28th. We're fired up. Danny, I know you are fired up. All the, you know, great names coming in, including some that are new to the AWE / Roar.
Very true, yeah. Of Thunder Rosa. The debut. We get the return of Ivelisse, and we'll be there. Camilla Kane, Priscilla Kelly, Kiera Hope. Mickey Knuckles will be there as well. So, I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of names, some returning, some debuting. You know, we'll have to see. I'm very excited about the event.
So am I. I can't wait to see that. Monday Night Roar, August 28th. We'll all be there. Now let's talk a little bit about other stuff going on. It looks like Bayley got injured on Raw. There was swelling in her shoulder. She's off for at least a week. She got some x-rays done. It was inconclusive. What does an injury to Bayley mean to the Raw Women's Division right now?
She's obviously a very loved person. And so I think it's going to hurt them as far as popularity goes. Hopefully her injury doesn't keep her out of action for too long. As the vision is concerned, I'm not really sure what impact her missing time will have. I guess part of that depends how much time she'll miss. To kind of flesh out the several stars they have, so that everybody kind of has a little more of a story with them. But I guess we kind of have to wait and see if Bayley's really going to miss any ring time or not.
That's going to be definitely interesting, and hopefully it is not something that keeps her away for a while. I definitely think as far as baby faces, maybe she is more important than just women overall. They definitely have a lot of great talent, but people that can get over it huge like she does, I think it's only her and Sasha Banks on the Raw side of things. One more topic I want to bring up today before we get to our interview that we have for today. And that is I want to now talk about the G1 climax. Of course, now it's been going on for a few weeks, and we have a lot of things already happening. We have already seen 12 nights of the G1. And here are the standings for the current blocks. In Block A, you have Zack Sabre Jr., Hiroshi Tanahashi, Tomohiro Ishii, Tetsuya Naito with 8 points. Then you have Togi Makabe, Hiroki Goto, Bad Luck Fale, and Kota Ibushi with 6 points. Yoshihashi with 4 points, basically making him, you know, with 3 nights left, basically eliminating him from competition, and with 0 wins and 0 points, Yuji Nagata, of course, also out of it.
Yeah, entirely eliminated. I mean, when you get down that far, sometimes your best hope is to play spoiler, you know?
Yeah, basically, it's about the only hope you have. So that's A block. So there's still a lot of people in there that could win it. You know, but it's not the same for the B block. In the B block, a little bit more definite. Okada has 12 points as the only undefeated participant of the G1. Kenny Omega in second with 10 points. Evil, Sonata, and Minoru Suzuki with 8 points. Tama Tonga, Toru Yano, and Michael Elgin with 4 points, who are eliminated from the tournament. Juice Robinson with 2 points, also eliminated from the tournament. And Satoshi Kojima with 0 points, also no wins, also out of the tournament. So here, where there's 8 people still in it on Block A, on Block B, you only have 5 people who are still in contention. Now, I do want to say Evil looked like he might have been injured in his match against Kenny Omega on night 12 of the G1, the most recent show that they had, where it looked like after Omega hit Evil with the V trigger and the reverse Hurricanrana, he looked out of it. He looked 100% out, and I thought, man, this guy maybe he will have to be taken out of the tournament if he's got some type of concussion. We've already seen the kind of things that have been going on recently with injuries, and I think they better to protect him and not put him in further danger.
The G1 is a very difficult schedule, even with the, you know, where they kind of have you in the multi-man tag matches and stuff, because each match is so important. Everybody wants, you know, everybody tries to treat each match as as the top level match, you know, as a main event match. So every guy throws everything into each and every single match. So you have that, and then you have your, you know, on your blocks off day, you have the multi-man match, but you still might take a beating in that too. There's very little rest for the wicked in the G1 climax.
Kata versus Omega on night 18, which is the last night of the block matches, may end up deciding winner of block B. But in Block A, it looks like it might still be anybody's game.
Looking like a dominant, you know, like the dominant champion he's been. So I almost have to go with Okada right now. I mean, he's the only clear winner so far.
Yeah, it looks like the G1 Rainmaker climax is what we're experiencing right now. And it'd be crazy if he does go... if he does win out and goes undefeated going into the rest of the year before finding an opponent for Wrestle Kingdom. But I don't know. Part of me still wants to see Kenny Omega finally get that W against Okada. And Okada versus Omega 3 is going to be great. So everybody, make sure that you check out the G1 Climax. All these shows have been fantastic on New Japan World for only 999 yen. Figure out how much that is in dollars and whatever else. And with that, now I want to go and play this interview that we had. We have here for you tonight. Tamika and I got a chance to talk to one of the 16 participants of this weekend's Scenic City Invitational, the Bone Collector, Dominic Guarini. So here you go. Now joining us on the Fans of Wrestling show is Dominic Guarini, the Bone Collector. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
Going great. How about you?
I'm doing good, guys. Just got back from training, so just chilling out here on a Monday night.
Well, we're very excited about everything that's been going on with you lately. Now, coming up, you will be in the Scenic City Invitational. How much do you know about SCI before you were actually called to be a part of it?
I was extremely familiar with the SCI, even though I literally just got back like into wrestling and like the independents back in 2015 when I started training. The SCI was something I heard about, and coming from Cleveland, I'm familiar with tournaments because I think the JT Lightning Invitational tournament that we do every year at AIW is one of the biggest. And I really put together, probably in my mind, that the three biggest on the indies right now would be Battle of Los Angeles, followed by J-Lit in my own mind, just because it's so close to home for me. And then lastly, SCI. So the opportunity to be in both J-Lit and SCI this year is really humbling for me and just my a little over a year in professional wrestling.
I was really excited when you were announced for it. Been really seeing you lately, and you made a big impression on people WrestleMania weekend. I believe when you wrestled Curt Stallion on a Wednesday night. How did you get started with wrestling?
That's an interesting question, because obviously with my background in jiu-jitsu, everybody thinks that I was kind of like a jiu-jitsu guy first and foremost, and then professional wrestling came second. But the truth of the matter, but that one ends up being that when I was about 3 years old, my mom got me a Hulk Hogan VHS, and my true first like combat sports love was professional wrestling. And I ran that all the way through to about the time where I was 16, about 2006. And it was one of those things where I guess maybe wrestling just wasn't cool anymore. And I got into mixed martial arts at that point. I got on the high school wrestling team, and I kind of became, you know, that like UFC guy. But then, after high school, I got into jiu-jitsu. I thought I was going to fight MMA. It never came to full fruition for me to have an actual fight. I got so ingrained in sport, jiu-jitsu, that I kind of dedicated everything from 19 years old to about 25 years old to doing competitive jiu-jitsu. It came down that I was doing a tournament in Chicago in 2014, and Kevin Steen had just gotten his kind of like big run with NXT and was getting called up to the main roster at that point. And when I was 15 and 16, before I fell out of love with wrestling, Kevin Steen was my absolute favorite wrestler of all time and made me want to be a wrestler back then. So to see him prospering the way he was, you know, excited me. So I did the IBJJF Worlds in 2015. I was extremely burnt out on jiu-jitsu at that point, like to an nth degree, to the point where any of my close personal friends from the gym I trained at Ohio would have probably told you that I was a completely different person than I was when I first started training. Just like, wouldn't say bitter, but just a completely different person, just really burned out and just beat down. So I went to Raw in Cleveland, and when I went to Raw in Cleveland, it was the night after Steen had, I think, lost to Cena at like Money in the Bank, and he just had like this big angle, and it was just kind of that night where I made the decision to go ahead and go to the AIW school literally about a month later. I did my research, due diligence, and I knew Johnny Gargano was training, as well as Candice LeRae. And when I got back into wrestling in that 2015 era, or that 2014 time, I got back into the indies. So of course I knew about Johnny and Candice. So it really wasn't a choice in the area where I wanted to go. I wanted to train with the best, because that's the kind of like background from jiu-jitsu that I'd had, is you make any sacrifice you can to train with the best people around you. And without a doubt, that was with AIW, Johnny, and Candace.
You mentioned Kevin Steen. It sounds like he was a huge influence in your wrestling career. Anybody else out there, be it WWE or any indie guys outside of Candace and Johnny, who, of course, are phenomenal. Anybody else who's an influence to your wrestling career?
Always Kurt Angle, I guess, because I always was drawn to him. The amateur style always got me, as well as when I was, you know, coming up in the indies, I was a big Bryan Danielson fan. So the stuff he was doing, he was, you know, incorporating Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu into professional wrestling well before, you know, I even started training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. As well, then, when I started in 2015, I would say Matt Riddle had been going for about 6 months. So I found a lot of early inspiration in Matt's work. And then just other inspirations would be just kind of people I got to get a chance to meet when I was first coming to AIW, when I was in the school. Guys like Tracy Williams, who's now kind of like, since Johnny's left and gone to NXT, Tracy Williams is like second like wrestling dad to me. And just other guys like that. And then I look at other guys from like a personal level that I take inspiration from now. Guys like Ethan Page, who I talk to on a pretty regular basis. He helps me, you know, with character work and promos, and I work for his promotion up in Canada all the time, Alpha One, as well as Stokely Hathaway has been a big inspiration and help to me, since we've been put together in Canada in January. I've learned a lot about social media, how to market myself from him. And then, the last one I'll go is, Tom Lawler has been big for me lately. It was my idea to bring Tom into AIW. I pushed, John Thorne to book him in the J-Lit, and it paid off really well. He's become like a really good friend of mine. I would have never thought, watching Tom Lawler fight in the UFC, that I would text him on a regular basis just to bounce ideas off him. But Tom's been great, and you know, those are just a lot of the guys. But other than Johnny and Candace, and the like Steen, realistically, I guess like Tracy Williams has been one of my big ones. He has always looked out for me and looked into me, so I thank him for that, because he's given me a lot of the opportunities that I've gotten thus far.
That's awesome. What was one of the first things that you learned or surprised about professional wrestling after switching from jiu-jitsu?
My transition is a little quicker than some, just because I guess I had like a background, like seeing the new kids at the academy now, you know, stuff like rolls and footwork is tough for them. That stuff came, I guess, a little more naturally from my amateur background and my jiu-jitsu background, and like break falls was something we did in jiu-jitsu. So I, you know, bumping wasn't as hard. I think I would just say, I guess, the toll on your body. I talked about this with some of my jiu-jitsu friends the other week. They asked me about like, what I have double shots or triple shot weekends, how I feel and how that relates to a jiu-jitsu tournament. Because here's the deal, like you can train 6 weeks to 8 weeks for a jiu-jitsu tournament and you could literally have a 20-second match and that's the only thing you're doing. Whereas for wrestling, you know, it's back-to-back-to-back-to-back weekends. No matter what, you're usually guaranteed anywhere between 8 to 15 minutes per match all the time in the car that you're driving. So I think the kind of, like, toll on the body that, like, maybe I wasn't necessarily ready for at first, but due to the ability of, like, me to want to go out and travel so much and work so much, allowing it to, like, kind of, like, get my body used to taking bumps and constantly doing things has helped. As well, I think like this is something that I talk to a lot of people about, the ability to kind of like come from a background like jiu-jitsu where you're not supposed to show emotion on your face very much. If you're in trouble, you're not supposed to let, you know, your opponent know. Whereas in professional wrestling, so much of it's about facials and expressions and emotions and emoting. Whereas, you know, coming from a background like jiu-jitsu, you know, if I'm in the middle of a match and I'm stuck in a submission, in jiu-jitsu, if I scream out, you know, in passion, the match is going to get stopped because the referee is not sure if I'm hurt or why I'm doing it. Whereas in, you know, pro wrestling, you know, if I've got a guy in an ankle lock, I'm going to scream because that's the idea behind it, is I want to show that emotion. So that is probably the number one thing I would say.
So far, you like you said, you're relatively newer in your wrestling career. Any dream opponents out there so far that you're looking forward to or wish you had the opportunity to just step into the ring and wrestle?
I guess right off the rip, one that I'd always wanted was Matt Riddle. I always thought it would happen by now, and heck, maybe it's going to happen this weekend with Matt on the opposite side of the bracket. I'm on the top side, he's on the bottom side. Matt's been a dream opponent of mine. As well, I look at it, Tom Lawler's a dream opponent. When I knew he was doing pro wrestling, that was one of the reasons why I pushed him to come in AIW, so I'm hoping to get him. Two that are going to surprise people are just, once again, it kind of goes back to that Kevin Steen thing of, like, when I got into the indies and I was really a big fan. Number one is Eddie Kingston. Like, another one is Eddie Kingston. I've gotten the chance to meet Eddie a bunch of times. I've traveled with Eddie, and he's just a really cool guy. And, he's one of the guys that I loved when I was a little younger on the indie scene. And he's still out there. He's still doing his thing. He's still going strong. So I know Eddie Kingston's a dream opponent. And then the last one is going to catch a lot of people off guard. But I know when I told John Thorne about this, it caught him off guard. But Nick Gage is another one. And like I said, it catches a lot of people off guard because of like the deathmatch guy. But I was so like into Nick Gage when I was 15 years old. Physically wise, like body wise, looks better than ever. And now that he's back in AIW, you know, maybe that's a match that can happen there somewhere down the line somewhere. But yeah, that one's like my interesting one.
That's definitely one I was not expecting you to say for sure.
Yeah, but busting on Nick Gage is always a surprise for people, because the idea was when AIW school, when I came, one of the first shows I saw was called Fresh Meat, where they took the kids from the academy and put them up against veterans. And I remember about, I want to say 7 months into me being at school, Thorne asked if we did another Fresh Meat, who my guys were, like, who would I want to wrestle? And it was like Matt Riddle was one, because at that time, like, the relationship there was pretty strong. Number two was, I think, Tracy Williams, which that ended up happening just out of pure luck anyways. And then number three was Nick Gage, which at that time he was on that parole violation, so it wasn't possible, but that one caught Thorne really off guard as well.
Piggybacking on that question, are there any wrestlers who may be retired legends, kind of like dream matches that may be possible, most likely out of the question, that in a dream scenario you'd love to have?
Yeah, so retired wrestlers, Bryan Danielson, number one, for sure. I guess, of course, we don't necessarily know what his future holds past this WWE deal. But yeah, he's technically retired, so Bryan Danielson, one. Number two, this is a really weird one. And I know if somehow Kerry Offal hears this, he's going to be really excited. But when I first met Kerry Offal, he talked to me about this guy named Danny Cannon. He did a lot of stuff for Beyond back in the early days of Beyond Wrestling. And he's just really, he's a, more of like a kickboxing style guy. And he's just a really vicious offense. And I loved him. So Danny Cannon, for my curiosity and to make Kerry Offal the happiest man on earth, because I think if that match were to somehow ever get made, if he came out of retirement, Kerry Offal would be the most happy man ever. And then I'm trying to think, I had one more. I literally just had it on the top of my head and I lost it. Give me a second.
Well, you were making Kerry Offal happy. So that right there, you know, that's the showstopper right there. You always want to make Kerry Offal happy.
Yeah.
Happy. And he's a great mind too. So if Kerry tells you like to look at something, you automatically like, okay, let's look at it. And it just tends to be the best ever.
Kerry's like another wrestling dad. Like I told someone the other day, I have like five or six wrestling dads. And they all are like the different kind of like relations when it comes to dads. Like I look at it like Johnny's like the stern, like your normal dad, like always wants the best for you, always looking out for you. And then I have like, Tracy Williams, who's like that dad, who's like the sports dad who pushes you really hard and just wants the best out of you. And like, you have to earn that compliment out of him. And then I have like Kerry Offal, who's like the cool dad, who's like always helping you out, giving you advice, always talking to you. Like, is the guy, like, he'd be the dad who'd like wake you up like in third grade if like a pitcher was pitching a no hitter and it was like 11 o'clock and mom was asleep. Like, that's Kerry Offal. And then like Ethan Page is like the other, like Ethan Page and John Thorne, like the other two wrestling dads I have. Whereas like, they're like the, hey, we're going to buy you underage alcohol so you can have a good time, dad.
Those are my kind of dads right there. Let's go ahead and get these drinks going, dad. Appreciate it. But no, it sounds like you've got such a vast dadhood going there that you're getting a lot from all of them. This SCI, I mean, AIW is up in Cleveland, and Cleveland is, you know, north, and we're heading south, you know, for this SCI. Oh, yeah. Have any of your dads instilled any wisdom on the Southern indie wrestling scene to you? Or what do you know about the Southern indie wrestling scene?
I'm familiar with the Southern scene. Last year, I want to say it was October of last year, Nick and Carrie came up to take part in a tag tournament we did. I talked to Carrie a little bit. I then reached out to Chandler Biggins in October, who's one of the co-owners of AIW. Sadly, he just passed away. But I reached out to him and I said, what do you think about me reaching out to Carrie to see about working in the South? And he told me he thought it was the best idea that I'd ever had. I reached out to Carrie in October. A little bit after that, it was almost November. It was right before I wrestled Zack Sabre Jr. And I just remember Carrie telling me to focus on that match, and then he would talk to me after. Did the match, got a lot of really good buzz on it, talked to Carrie, and then I started traveling I did a 17-hour road trip with Carrie and Nick and Trip Cassidy to ACW in Florida, and it was kind of like that weekend I had won them over, and now, you know, I wrestle in the South quite a bit. I'm besides just doing SCI on Sunday, I'm going to be doing the Southern Underground Pro, and I did their debut show out in March. I've worked out in Kentucky a lot, and just like the ability to work down South, it's just a little bit of a different crowd. It goes to a more story-based idea, and I think like what I do with the submissions and the shoot fighting gimmick, I can tell kind of like a different story that maybe they're not used to that thus far they seem extremely entertained with.
I did have a question for you here from Twitter. What is the longest drive you've made to a show so far?
Oh, that ACW drive. It was myself, Alex, and Alex Daniels. We started in Canton, which is where I live. So I live in about an hour south of Cleveland. So for like training and every other purpose, like I drive an hour each way. But that day, just because it made more sense, we met in Canton. So we went from Canton to Indianapolis, which is about 4.5 hours. We literally left after we wrestled, me, Alex, and Tripp. We wrestled in Indianapolis. Then we went to Memphis, or we went to Murfreesboro, which is where Carrie's from. That was about another 7 hours. And then we met in Chattanooga to meet Iggy. And then after we went to Chattanooga, we went to Port St. Lucie. So I think it was like 17 hours each way. So like 34 hours combined. So yeah, it was quite a trip, but about 34 hours would be the longest one I've done thus far.
Oh, wow. That is definitely quite a trip there.
That's more than a trip. That's a journey.
Funny thing is there's still, I believe, a package of Benadryl in Trip Cassidy's car from where I was trying to like help myself sleep because like I'm a terrible car sleeper.
And you're not supposed to sleep on these trips now. I mean, I don't know a whole lot, but I know that, you know, your face winds up on social media if you're sleeping. So kind of good and kind of bad.
I think that's an older thing. Don't tell guys like PB Smooth from the AAW school or Alex Daniels, who are notorious for getting in the car and falling right asleep, is like that's their specialty. For me, it's at about the 18th hour, I'm trying to pry my eyes open, and at some point I need to sleep or I'm going to probably just be unhealthy.
What are some go-to snacks for the road?
With trying to, you know, obviously shave down a little weight, I look into like, actually, this the new go-to snack is, thanks to Tom Lawler, there are these baked snap peas now. I usually find them at Sheetz or I'll stop at a grocery store. But essentially, they're just snap peas, but they're baked and they taste kind of like potato chips, but they're actually healthy for you. So like those are my like number one go. Otherwise, right now it's like Quest bars or some kind of protein bar. And Purple Monster, the Ultra Zeros, because it's the greatest flavor ever made.
I've never had a Monster, but I hear they're quite a rush.
I think at this point, after all the road trips, I think caffeine's completely adverse to me, but I just like the taste at this point, I think.
Nothing wrong with a good Monster. I will, you know, say that's a pretty, pretty dang good flavor. So good choice. Very good choice there. Snap peas, not so sure about, but you know, you're trying to eat healthy on the road. I know that's pretty tough.
I was real tepidatious about it. And then Tom forced me the other week when we were on the way to Indiana, and I was greatly surprised.
Strange things you learn on road trips. So yeah. Surprise yourself. All right. So you are wrestling now all over. You're coming south. What's the strangest thing that you've seen or fan encounter that you've had so far?
Oh, man. I get a lot of really weird ones with the gimmick or with, like, my background and everything. I probably have met at shows anywhere. This is just about anywhere. I've probably met 19 training partners of Brock Lesnar. I've met more black belts than I could have ever imagined I would have met in the jiu-jitsu gyms that I've been to. And not just black belts in jiu-jitsu. There's officially, I guess, now black belts in kickboxing, black belts in wrestling, and just other really random assorted martial arts that I honestly, I've guessed in my almost 10 plus years in combat sports never existed, but they exist now. Otherwise, like that's the main thing. Like, I get like the weird fan interactions. It's just like the crazy fans who are like, oh, you know, like, I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. You know, it's one of those things that it's like, I know that either they're misinformed or they truly believe it. I had one guy tell me he tapped Ken Shamrock and Brock Lesnar in a training session once, and I just kind of did one of those grin and bear. It's like, oh, right, really? That's really impressive. So that, I guess that one takes the cake for me.
He tapped Ken Shamrock and Brock Lesnar in training.
Yeah, which...
Tell me you put him in an armbar. Tell me you made him tap out just because of that story.
I was so flabbergasted and just really taken aback that, like, I just kind of, like, backed down. It might have been my fear via how impressive this man likely was. I do remember he was probably in a good enough shape to maybe do, the warm-ups at jiu-jitsu before being completely gassed. So having tapped Brock Lesnar, who is the most freak athlete quite possibly of my generation, would be quite a feat.
Speaking of guys like Lesnar, any thoughts of you doing MMA instead of pro wrestling going with your background?
Probably not MMA at this point. I'm 27, so Ohio's a pretty ridiculous state when it comes to regulations in terms of, like, fighting. So I'm more than fine just being kind of taking the spot I've taken at the jiu-jitsu gym / MMA gym I train at now, where I'm kind of like a coach. I've coached a kids jiu-jitsu team for the last 5 or so years. And those kids are at the age now where they're kind of just starting to become noticed. And I'm really excited about those guys. They've been training for 5 to 6 years. So I have a kid who's 14, he's been training for 5 years. So he's been training since he was 9. And he's just becoming a killer. So that's awesome. We have a couple MMA guys at the gym and a couple of them are my best friends, and I'm happy for their success in the MMA world. And they're more than happy for my success in pro wrestling. I think just for me to be a happier human, as I said, when I got burned out of jiu-jitsu and competing so much, I think if I tried to do something like MMA, I would probably just be a miserable person again. Whereas, like, I think at this point, pro wrestling just makes me so happy. That I would just stick with that. But I do love helping my teammates get ready for fights or competitions coming up. And, you know, I look forward to those guys and get just as nervous for them as I do myself at this point. So probably no MMA on the horizon. I have looked to maybe make a return to doing some jiu-jitsu tournaments, but with my wrestling schedule, as busy as it is, it's been difficult. But one cool thing that's happened in the jiu-jitsu world since I kind of phased down and went to pro wrestling is there is a circuit around now called Fight to Win, which is a super fight based promotion in jiu-jitsu where essentially they go to certain towns, you know, per se Cleveland or Pittsburgh, and they put together a card of 20 jiu-jitsu fights. I would like to get on one of those at some point. They've done Cleveland, Columbus, and Pittsburgh, and it just so happened that Cleveland was on the night of an AIW show. Columbus was on the same night as AIW's Absolution, which is our biggest show of the year, so there was no way I could do that. And then Pittsburgh, which was last weekend, I had gotten the date to do Tier 1 in Brooklyn, New York. So I couldn't turn that down because I've been just trying to travel as much as possible. So I'd like to do Fight to Win at some point, but it'll just be mainly about schedules working out for me.
Are you doing pro wrestling full-time, or pro wrestling and the training that you're doing full-time, or are you doing anything else in addition to that?
This is weird. I'm such a regimented human being at this point. So I do have a almost full-time job outside of pro wrestling. I work for a company in my hometown that helps people with developmental disabilities find employment. So that's kind of like my full-time job is that. But they're very wide open with my wrestling schedule, like taking Friday and Monday off for SCI and all that this weekend. They're very understanding with that. And as well, when Johnny Gargano left to become or left to go to NXT, sadly, that also took Candice's wife with him. So we were left without a trainer at the AIW school. So I stepped up and I teach some of the classes as well. Eric Ryan, who's a 10-year vet out of the area, has been helping me on Thursdays. So I do that Monday through Thursday. And then usually Friday through Sunday are my bookings. So it's I'm pretty hectic. Usually Mondays and Wednesdays, I go to work. I literally from work, go to Cleveland. And then Mondays, I stay up later in Cleveland and lift and do cardio. Wednesdays, I'll do jiu-jitsu. I'll leave Cleveland to come back to where I live an hour south and do jiu-jitsu. Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's work, cardio and lifting, and then pro wrestling, and then just back to the grind. So I'm regimented. The goal would be to make pro wrestling a full-time thing, but I have like an undergraduate degree, so paying that off is a real hassle. That doesn't make wrestling full-time right now feasible, but you know, my hope is that in the future I can make pro wrestling completely my full-time job. But until then, I have a great position that allows me to be very free, do something that's real fun, and still let me do pro wrestling at a near full-time clip. So,
have you gone overseas yet, or if not, is that a goal at some point?
Going overseas is a goal. Obviously, being a mat-based guy, Europe would be awesome for me. I've done Canada. Obviously, I work for Alpha One up there. So yeah, I'd love to go overseas, either Europe or Japan, obviously, because you know Japan's got stuff like Jinoki Jiom, stuff like that. Actually, my biggest overseas dream is to do WXW's Ambition tournament next year, which is kind of like a shoot style tournament that they do the weekend of 16 Carat, and they usually take guys with fighting type backgrounds. Like this year, I know Matt Riddle was in it, Mike Bailey was in it, so. Jeff Cobb was in it, so guys who have like legitimate kind of shooter backgrounds get to go in that, and it's kind of like a shoot fighting deal. So like that's like one of my big things is I would love to do Ambition next year or the year after that, you know, whenever they feel fit.
That would definitely be awesome. Have you had any a favorite match, something real memorable that stands out so far in your career?
Probably most of these are going to be AIW. Up near the top for me would definitely be, I got like three-ish or so. Number one, I would start with Tracy Williams in a singles match. It was Jay Litt from last year, which would have been 2016. It was one of those deals where it was the weekend where I knew I was wrestling Saturday. We had a student show on Saturday, so I was just looking forward to that, looking forward to watching the first round of the tournament. I came over from, I think, doing like Billy Gunn's gimmick table because we had Billy Gunn in for that weekend. And like, I had always been the guy tasked with running the gimmick tables for the stars because I guess I was intimidating and no one was going to try to rip me off. And John pulled me aside and said, "You have your gear?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay, well, you're going to wrestle Tracy because Tyson Dukes got turned away at the border." So we put together a match that was something that I really liked. It earned me Tracy Williams' respect, and it was one of those things that has helped me out a lot, you know, to kind of harbor that friendship between me and him and, you know, that mentorship that he gives me. So that's number one. Number two would, without a doubt, probably be my match with Zack Sabre Jr. last year, which would have been last November at AIW's Hell on Earth show. I remember like the whole process of how that match went to be. Johnny had just left in October. I think he'd like literally left us to go to NXT. He had just moved and we were all pretty like bummed. And I know me and John had discussions about just in general, like how we thought the indies were kind of like in a really weird spot because all the top guys were getting signed and the indies were doing nothing to create new stars. And we just had that discussion like 2 weeks prior and we were at dinner and we were going through the card and the last match he mentioned was Zack Sabre Jr. versus me. And I double took and I said, "Are you serious?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." He's like, "We had that discussion about creating stars." He's like, "I think if we do you and Zach, I think we can build your star up big because of it." it was one of those things that I wrestled Zach and another guy that is very, you know, has been very helpful to me. You know, he routinely will tell people how good I am for how little how short of an amount of time I've worked. So to me, like, that match meant everything. I remember this is the day after Thanksgiving. So, like, for like that whole week, I was just real nervous about everything. Just wanted that match to go off without a hitch. And he was, you know, very open, willing, and excited to do a lot of the ideas that he had planned and I had planned. And it just came together for a really good match. And then the last one I'll put on this list for AIW type matches that are memorable for me would have been I wrestled BJ Whitmer this year in March. We had kind of been working a program since September of the prior year that he requested after our first match because he thought I had a lot of potential. And it all led in us doing this big gimmick match. And we wanted it to be a little different. We could have done I Quit because it's kind of what it was, but we went like old school WCW and we didn't submit or surrender. So the only way to win was for the opponent to submit or surrender. It was just kind of like this cool crowd brawl I got to have that got to take me back to like some of the stuff I used to watch with him and Jimmy Jacobs. I got to do the spike spots with him. And then I got to do just a lot of cool stuff in that match that I probably won't ever do again because it was really dumb for my body, but it was fun at the time. And then I knew it would be one of BJ's like last kind of like big matches because I knew he had gotten signed with ROH exclusive. So he can only do stuff for ROH and then he could do some international dates, but he's so ingrained in the ROH office. I knew that I was going to have the chance to probably have one of his last 10 matches ever. So to me, like that was a big deal because, you know, BJ Whitmer's one of the guys who made independent wrestling truly what it is throughout the years. So it'd be that one. And then just like just some random assorted ones would be like I got to wrestle Martin Stone WrestleMania weekend. I think the Friday night of WrestleMania weekend. That Curt Stein match is really like up there with me because of the idea of like young prospects meets young prospect in the first match of WrestleMania weekend. And the idea of two guys that thought, and this is me and Curt in a nutshell, we both thought that we were disrespected by not getting bigger bookings that weekend. So we wanted to go out and just set crazy tone for WrestleMania weekend. And I know a lot of people thought we did. Trying to think of anything else. My Kane Justice matches from CWF Mid-Atlantic are up there because they've gotten such kind of rave reviews from everybody. And I feel like Kane and me could be career rivals. So I know those two are up there for me. And then I'm sure that, and then of course I would guess my other one would be, in June, I got to wrestle Alex Daniels, who is one of my training partners who I came through the AEW school with. I got to wrestle him at Evolve in Detroit, and it was kind of one of those full circle moments for us because we're both Johnny Gargano students, you know, and the idea has always been that Johnny's the WWN icon. So to kind of like help be two of his students opening up a show for Evolve was a big deal to us.
I was really hyped for that match when I saw it. It was pretty cool, especially because he wasn't advertised and everybody was somewhat surprised, and it was pretty cool to see that on the Flow Slam TV.
It absolutely was. So tell us, Dominic, you've had some matches thus far with some, let's call them some old guard in indie wrestling, some new guard, some present day guard. And in this tournament here, you're going up in the first round. You're slated against Eric Royal. Saying that you, of course, get past Eric Royal, on deck could be Curt Stallion, who you've had, like you said, WrestleMania weekend. You guys just set the tone, just set the bar way high for everybody to try to follow that. And Jason Cade, is there anybody that you're looking forward to between those two gentlemen if you get past Eric Royal in this tournament?
Curt, it would probably be Curt. I think like another one of those, Curt and I could be career rivals. Curt's a couple more years in than me, but you know, I think we have both kind of hit our stride at about the same time. I think that mindset-wise, when it comes to wrestling, we're very similar. And I think that like me and Kurt could be career rivals. So I look forward to Kurt, of course. And then of course, I think that it goes without saying the one match that I want the most off of that bracket would easily be Matt Riddle. I just think that there's so much, between us in some way, shape or form to be done, but there's also two other guys on the bracket that are sadly wrestling first round that I want to wrestle singles as well. And one is Gary J, who I wrestled WrestleMania weekend as well. I thought we had a really good match, and I love Gary's style. I think he's very underrated, and I think that Scenic City is going to be really good for him this year. And then Anthony Henry is another guy who I know that a lot of people have been wanting to see that match happen, and it just hasn't crossed the right paths yet, but I know Anthony Henry's a guy I want to wrestle. And then I would say, if I had to go one more, would be Joey Janela. I know Joey very well, and we've been in matches together, but we've never wrestled each other singles. And I think Joey and I could do just some different stuff and some fun stuff.
I'd pay money to see you and Janela go at it. That would be different and fun. You mentioned a lot of great names there. What is one thing that you want the SCI fans, people who may not be familiar with you, you're getting out there and you're getting your name out there, but there's a strong Southern base of fans and that come to this tournament, and they may not be familiar with your work. What is something that you want to tell them? What is something that we should all know about Dominic Guarini?
The ability to just grab a submission out of anywhere, because that's I guess kind of the thing I do, is that literally anytime someone thinks they've got me in an advantageous position, all that time I've trained jiu-jitsu has taught me to catch a limb from anywhere, to catch the neck from anywhere, literally just catch you from anywhere and put you in a submission. And even if I don't get you right away, it's just that constant wear down, that constant pressure of searching for the submission, searching for the finish, that it's going to wear your opponents down. And hopefully that's the game plan for Eric Royal. Obviously, Eric's a bigger guy, so my thought process is I'm just going to kind of throw it all out there and, hopefully just wear him down over the time of this match.
And with that one, I also want to know, Dominic, is who is Dominic Guarini outside the ring? What are some of your hobbies, things you like to do, music? What do you like to do when you're not working, you're not on the road? What's life for you on a regular basis?
That's tough because it's not so much time to be on the road. Obviously, I guess it's clear jiu-jitsu is one of those big hobbies of mine. Outside of wrestling, like a lot of times if I have an off weekend, I try to get extra training in with jiu-jitsu if it's possible. Truthfully, I used to play video games, but video games have kind of gone by the wayside since wrestling started. I've gotten so busy and I got an actual job that has a set schedule every week. But just like, I guess like I get to play this tough badass character, but like I like things that aren't necessarily as badass. Like for me, like I love 90s culture. Like one of my better friends is Derek Direction, and we talk about like the 90s stuff we like. Like if you see my newer t-shirt, it's a Mario Monsters based shirt, and that's just because that's the stuff I like. I like old Nicktoons. I love to watch that stuff. Dragon Ball Z is a big, thing that I love to watch too. I like to watch comedy movies, and really it's just one of those things that I guess if I had more time, I'd probably be more of like a connoisseur of things, but I'm so busy and so ingrained in professional wrestling right now and other things like that I'm busy with that. But as well, big sports fan, love the Cleveland Browns, no matter how bad they are every year. Every Cleveland sports team is my favorite team. And then when it comes to college teams, Ohio State is number two for me, though. Whereas, this is a weird one, but University of Florida is number one because I grew up in Florida. So when I was of that adolescent age, picking up like a favorite team, living in Florida, I picked University of Florida. So that stuff is kind of like, I guess, my hobbies outside of the ring.
And what's the music of choice?
Music of choice is a little bit everything. For me, I'm a rock guy, but like I like all different kinds of eras of rock. Like for me, I guess like alternative / grunge would be like up there as like a top one. I've recently gotten into more pop punk type stuff, and I think that's like a John Thorne influence, because that's the kind of stuff him and IW bartender Nick Sanka listen to. And then my other one that's kind of like always throws people a little bit off is I like early, like late 80s, early 90s rap, stuff like NWA, like Ice Cube when he's by himself, Biggie, Pac, stuff like that. I don't really like newer rap. I'm pretty much try to keep my rap eras between like 88 and 96. With maybe like some other stuff thrown on top of that I've liked and heard recently, but mostly older rap, that grunge kind of like alternative rock, and then just a little bit of a mixture of everything else.
And that's not bad outside of, you know, the UF thing, you know. Outside of that, everything else is pretty cool. Don't throw me in a submission. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
Now, this may be something that comes up during SCI weekends with a lot of people, so I'd like to get your opinion, your thoughts on this. It's a very serious question here. Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola?
Oh, that's a tough one. I really don't like normal pop now, but if I'm having to go, I Coke Zero is my absolute favorite thing in the world, so I guess just based on that, it has to be Coke.
There we go. Did you hear they're doing away with the Coke Zero?
What? That is the worst news you could give me. Stop that.
No, for real. They're coming up with a new one called Coke Zero Sugar, I believe.
Okay, well, hopefully the flavor does not change much, because not only is that going to affect me, but I would assume it's going to affect about 67.3% of every independent wrestler on road trips that after they've had 9 Monsters once to switch and they usually go to Coke Zero.
Yeah, so supposedly this new Coke Zero Sugar has more of the original taste of Coke.
I'm in between on that. Like, I think Coke Zero's got such a distinct taste that I like. Now I'm very disappointed by this.
Coca-Cola may be turning you to Pepsi now. Who knows?
We'll see. Pepsi Max, not nearly as good as Coke Zero, so I don't know about it's a tough one. I'm real disappointed.
Well, hopefully you'll be happy with the new Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. And it's not much different from Coke Zero. With that, Dominic, we definitely want to thank you for being on the show. Everyone listening, make sure you go on Twitter, follow Dominic Guarini at DGuariniBC. Also, promoters, please, you want to have Dominic on your show? He'd love to collect some more bones. Contact him at bookguarini@gmail.com. You can also find his merchandise on Pro Wrestling Tees. Just search for Dominic Guarini on there. Is there anything else you like to plug, let people know?
Otherwise, other than, of course, you know, guys, come out to the Scenic City Invitational this weekend on Friday and Saturday. As well, guys, come out to Southern Underground Professional on Sunday in Nashville. Kurt Stein and Joey Janela is the main event. I'm going to be taking on Kevin Koo and Brett Eisen in a 3-way number one contendership for the Bone Storm title, which that match, whoever wins that match will get the title shot in October. As well, some of the AIW kids will be coming down with me. They will be in a match. It'll be AJ Gray versus Chase Oliver, who is somebody that you guys will clearly be knowing about after this weekend, because he is, in my opinion, the future of high-flying and wrestling, versus Josh Bishop. My wrestling son, as he calls himself, he calls me dad, even though there is no possible way that is humanly possible. And then lastly, we have Derek Direction, who is the Nickelodeon narcissist, a complete and total Nickelodeon character, who I think will do very well in the South. So check out that. Also, guys, a lot of great guys in that card. Stevie Fierce versus Gary J for the freelance title. The Carnies are in a 4-way tag match. So there's a lot of really good stuff on that card as well. I'll plug this one for AIW in the home front. On September 15th, we are bringing in Dean Malenko to do a seminar. So if you are a professional wrestler that wants to get better, come on up to Cleveland on September 15th, because we are bringing in Dean Malenko for a seminar and then a meet and greet after. And the card that night will probably be more than stacked. Otherwise, I don't think I have too much. You guys have kind of covered everything else. Thank you for doing all my plugs for me. Feel free to follow me on like Twitter, like they said. I try to interact with everybody. Ethan Page has taught me the beauty of vanity searching. So even if you don't tag me, likely I will find what you posted. So,
see, we knew that Ethan Page was in this world for something. If nothing, it's to teach people how to be, you know, how to do vanity search. And with that, Dominic Guarini, once again, thank you for being on the Fans of Wrestling show. We look forward to meeting you this weekend at the SCI, so, and also seeing you there live. So we'll definitely see you. Thanks again for taking the time to talk to us.
No worries. Thank you guys for having me on.
All right. And thanks again to Dominic Guarini for being on the show today. I just wish him have a great time, put in a great show. Tamika and I will be there front row screaming our ears off. Well, she'll be screaming my ear off. But it's going to be great. Everybody did not get a chance to get tickets while they were on advance sales. They will be sold at the door, so you still get a chance to get them there if any floor seat tickets are remaining, but definitely $10 for general admission. They will be also having donations for Iceberg, a legend here in the state of Georgia who's been dealing with some injuries. So they like to do raffles during the weekend, so they'll do that to benefit Iceberg. A lot of other wrestling shows happening this weekend. Wrestle Circus, WWE has shows. CCW has Tremont versus Onita. That's going to be huge. More G1 Climax. Check it all out. Right now, great time to be a pro wrestling fan. Enjoy it, fans. Make sure you also continue to enjoy our shows. Please subscribe to the Wrestling with Wards Audio Network. We are on iTunes. We are on Android devices and SoundCloud. Please subscribe. Give us a rate, a review. Also, make sure you check us out at WrestlingWithWards.com for all the great articles and show reviews, as well as podcasts, all in the Wrestling with Wards Audio Network. Follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Tamika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.